Welcome to the Beers with Bands podcast with your host, Michael Torres.
Pretty good. How are you?
You know, I'm doing okay. You know, it's Friday. I'm off the next 2 days. And
happy 421.
Right.
For all those that had to wait a day to celebrate.
All of us adult people that had to wait. Well, first of all, my name is Michael. Thank you so much for being down to be on the show.
Yeah, thank you. I'm Marty. Thank you for having me. It's nice to talk to you, Michael.
Yeah, nice to talk to you too. Dig the Stars Hollow shirt. Those are the dudes. Fucking gods. Yeah, like, dude, the album in general, like, I know we haven't fully started, but like, the album's sick.
Thank you.
I'm stoked to talk about it.
I think it's pretty sick too. I'm pretty proud of it.
Oh yeah. I mean, other than that, what I'll do here is I'll crack my beer, do a little intro, and then bring you in.
Oh wait, hold on. Let me go grab one. I'll join you.
Oh fuck yeah.
All right, let's fucking go.
All right. In 3, 2, 1. And it's probably for the best that I don't go out with friends. I'd rather stay at home instead. And smoke myself to sleep. Or stay up and overthink. Or watch reality TV. What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Beers with Bands. This week, you know, I virtually ventured back to the Carolinas. I'm sitting down with Marty from the band Stress Fractures. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty freaking good right now. How about yourself?
You know, I'm doing good. Work was shitty, but now, you know, it's Friday afternoon. I have some beers with me. I'm sitting down talking to you about everything you have going on, so it's going to be a good night.
I know, that's right.
Like I mentioned, you are from the band Stress Fractures. For people that might not know, Stress Fractures is a kind of like emo, pop punk, indie punk from, I think it's all South Carolina.
Yep.
This year you put out the debut full length, and we'll kind of get into that. But before we get too far, can you say, obviously, I've already said your name's Marty from Stretch Fractures, but what do you do in Stretch Fractures?
All right. What's up? Hey, everybody. I'm Marty. I play guitar and sing, and I'm the primary songwriter for the band Stress Fractures. For those that aren't as familiar with me, I also have a label called Acrobat Unstable. I play in a band called Clear Body. I play in a band called Dry Rot. Busy, 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 but... Stress Fractures is the one. That's the me, baby.
Okay. And then, like, when I was looking through everything, it seems, and correct me if I'm wrong in any of this, it's kind of more of a, like, a solo project, but it's becoming more of a full band thing, or...
Yes. So, the live band has always been me and my partner, Liz. They play bass. And we've had a rotating cast of guitarists and drummers over the last, I don't know how many years. All the songs on the record are songs that I wrote, and on the record, I pretty much performed them sans drums. I got my friend Caden from Pool Kids to do that. He's a lot better than me. But yeah, so it's sort of a solo project, but Liz has always been there. And with, you know, everything moving forward, now that these songs are out, because some of them have been written for 5, 6, 7 years. Now that they're out and we can actually work on new shit, it's, you know, it's me and them and whoever else we can get to come sit in a room with us.
Okay. I mean, that's awesome that you're able to, you know, find these people that can come in and like help with the vision.
Yeah. It's like hard to be the only person with the vision. It's yeah. I'm exhausted. I feel like I can't like run the band properly if I'm doing everything myself.
Well, and then on the other end, you always hear about some people that are like so in their head, and like, I don't know if egotistical is like the right word, but like it's their project. They want it done like all a certain way. So it's nice that like you aren't one of those people. You're like, yeah, come in and like help with this.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just I definitely at a point in time was like a control freak with this project and didn't want to let anyone else in. But after getting to like work with so many other bands over the last few years and not focus as heavily on Stress Fractures, I think I definitely like came to the conclusion that I was missing out by not including the rest of my bandmates and a lot of the processes of being a band.
Yeah.
So I don't know. No time like now. I mean, like, you know, right now it's weird. The band is like more popular than it's ever been. So it's no time like the present to just kind of change things up and make it work better for everybody.
But so, I mean, all this is leading up to the debut full length, like we mentioned, your debut self-titled full length, that came out in January. I mean, at this point, we're almost the end of April. It's been out for a little over 3 months now. Like, what's the response been on it?
Overwhelmingly good in like terms of how I would see it. I personally didn't have a whole lot of faith in this project, and it was always sort of felt like a passion project to me. But when we put out the first single, which was also called Stress Fractures, it just kind of like popped off. I guess it's what people wanted to hear at that point in time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. It definitely got more people listening to us than ever before. And from there, nobody's been like mean to me about it. You know, I'm not like going out of my way to like see what people are saying about it, or like trying to see if people are saying mean things. But like, usually when somebody tags us in something on Twitter, it's they're usually being kind of nice.
Yeah.
Which is cool, because before people just weren't talking to us at all. So.
Well, I said before we started recording, like, I really dug and love this this album. Like, it pops off so well. It keeps you hooked throughout the entire thing. Like, it's definitely one that I listened to it probably 3 or 4 times today, just getting, you know, re-mentally prepared to sit down with you. And like, I was ready to hit like replay every time we got to the end. It just takes you for a good ride, and I loved it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Like I mean, even with I think in the original email, let me remember what I think it was. See You Next Semester is like the one song that like I had found on a random playlist, and I was like, okay, I need to hit them up and have them on the podcast, because I mean, this is just sick all around.
Had you heard the original version of that song before?
Or I don't think so.
Because that song, there's like an old version of it that was on a split we did.
Okay.
And it like popped off on TikTok.
Really?
And like out of nowhere went from having like 4 or 5,000 streams to having like 24,000 streams.
Wow.
And that's for some reason, and I changed like the background image on Spotify to say that we re-recorded the song and it sounds better on the album, because I'm trying to get, because that song still gets listened to so much, and I want people to listen to the better version of it. But I don't know if anyone's actually looking at that. But yeah, that's crazy that you, I'm glad you heard the right version the first time. I guess that's why I was asking. I'm glad you heard the version I like.
Okay. Between like the two versions, is it just like recording style that has changed, or was there more changes?
There are a few parts that we tweaked, and it's a lot more dialed in. The guitar tones are better. I definitely didn't practice singing when we recorded the first version, and I have definitely practiced singing in like the 3-year gap between recording the two versions, or 2-year gap. I don't remember how long it's been, but. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. It's hard for me to go back and listen to the old one. Same with like there's an old version of Smoke also. It's night and day difference.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll have to check it out just to see if I like, just to see the comparison to it, because it's always interesting when bands kind of revamp a song, and then obviously they're like kind of in your position where they're like, I don't even listen to the old one anymore, and then sometimes the old version still like kind of hits in a different level where it's still fun to have it on like the playlist.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I don't know. They're definitely different vibes. The other one I think leans more heavily into like modern baseball style emo, whereas I think the album version is like a rock track.
With like I mentioned this on a couple episodes. I think when I sat down with Swiss Army Wife and Kerosene Heights, like I feel like 2023, and obviously you run a label, so you can kind of give your input for this as well. Like I feel like 2023 is somewhat of like a emo revival year, between especially those releases. Your release I feel like falls in there, because especially with the harsher vocals that are in there, it really falls in. So I think it's like a great year to be releasing this style of emo again.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I know a lot of new school folks are going to hear things like I don't know, like I hate using them as an example, but people are going to hear like Tiny Moving Parts in this stuff, and they're going to think it's an emo band, and then they're also going to hear it sort of, it's the Algernon tuning, so maybe somebody thinks some parts sound like Algernon, but I think like 90s emo, that second wave emo, is definitely what's inspiring me and everybody else that's making emo adjacent music right now, because that shit hit way harder. It was fucking dope.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, that's the shit that I still like listen to on a regular basis, so yeah. And I get stuck my ways and just listen to the same shit, but it'd be nice to, it's nice that like I'm finding stuff that falls in that same vein that I can just like add to my normal listening, to kind of break out of that shell, I guess.
Yeah, I guess I didn't really think about how much it shined through until I looked at our Spotify analytics, and it says most of the people that listen to us are in their like late 20s to early 30s, and I'm like, oh, so this is just like the continuation of what they listen to when like 10 years ago, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. One thing I noticed too is in the write-up that you did on Bandcamp, you kind of put this little tag on there that said the end of an era. Mm-hmm. I know you kind of mentioned that now you're starting to add these other artists in to kind of help with the vision. Is that what you're meaning by like the end of the era?
It had a lot of, it really is like closing the chapter on an entire part of that band where like I don't think moving forward any of the music is going to really sound quite as similar to that record. It's definitely not all going to be written by me solely. It's just I'm ready to, I don't dislike the record in any way, and I don't dislike tappy emo music in any way, but I'm ready to start kind of like moving on from that. And I want to keep calling that music Stress Fractures because it's definitely coming from the same place, but I just want to do something else.
Right.
So to say that it's the end of the era, it's kind of me making a note for myself that this is it. You can't do that again. You already did that. Don't forget.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I read that, I saw that little blip and then I was like, oh, does this mean like, it's all like, this is the final hurrah. Like this is all done. But it makes more sense as to like, no, this is like this era of my life is done.
Yeah.
Onto the next chapter of this band and where it's going to go.
Yeah. Especially like I said, since a lot of those songs are older tracks and you can find them further in our discography into like different versions and demos and forms. But I don't know. It's Swim Into the Sound. Said that it's like a greatest hits album, but if you re-recorded all of your greatest hits and made them sound like the greatest versions of themselves.
Okay.
Like that's kind of the way that he put it. And I agree with that. That's kind of what I was going for. It's just all those songs have been what Stress Fractures is, but there's never been a version of them that I was happy with. So I bundled them all up and then put some new songs in it also.
Yeah. So cool. I mean, I totally get that, and I'm stoked to see what this next iteration and version of Stress Fractures is going to be, and to see how like the whole collaborativeness like really shines through with everything going forward.
Yeah.
This past weekend, you had the album release show for this record. Yeah. I mean, it was building up for about 3 months. Like you finally just had it. How was that?
It was much like how I didn't expect the record to do very well. I didn't think the show was going to do that well either, but I think our first like actual time headlining a show, and 100 people came. So for me, that's really sick. Yeah. That might not be like a huge number to other people, but for me, that's a big deal. And they, you know, they came early and watched the first band and stayed all the way to the end, which is also really cool. I wish that we had like all of our merch in time for that show. Some of it didn't show up on time, which was a bummer. That was probably the only bad thing that happened though. Everything else about it was fucking sick. People knew the words and sung along, which doesn't happen very much. And, yeah, I don't know. We got to see a lot of our friends that we don't get to see very often. It was everything I could have ever wanted and more.
Oh, dude, I love to hear that. That's always awesome when, you know, everyone rolls out for those special moments and like you just don't expect that it's going to be that crazy and then it just ends up being like that.
Yeah, it was a party. It was lit. I wish more people could have seen it. Everyone else missed out.
Hell yeah. One funny question that I had from listening to the record, in the song "See You Last Semester," you kind of mention every time I'm at Waffle House after 2 a.m. As you're reminiscing about a past friend or acquaintance.
Yeah.
How often are you at Waffle House after 2 a.m.?
When I wrote the song, I guess pretty often. I don't know. So have you spent much time in the South? Are you Southern?
So I'm in the Midwest. I haven't been to the South in quite a while, but I am aware of Waffle House. I've been there multiple times.
Yeah. So it's like a beacon of hope. It's always open. As long as there's nothing wrong, it's always open. So it's like, there's definitely a point in my life where I'm like, it's cheap and it's open and I'm awake and I need to go there. So like when I was like late night delivery driving for a calzone place, we would eat at Waffle House a bunch. Or like if we're on tour, we eat at Waffle House because they're always open and there's always one in the South off of every fucking interstate. So yeah, I don't know. Definitely at that point in time, I found myself in Waffle House a lot. I think I've been there like twice in 6 months, maybe three times in 6 months lately.
Yeah, that's living in the Midwest. I definitely wish we had Waffle Houses. Like, there's so many from like the times that I was on tour. There's so many good like food spots in like the South, or especially like the Southeast, that I just wish would make its way to the Midwest. Like cookouts,
Waffle Houses. I was gonna say, I feel like cookouts kind of creeping, kind of getting its way around, but not quite fast enough. Waffle House actually gets around kind of fast. They're in Ohio, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's sort of the Midwest, but not really. Yeah,
almost there.
Almost.
Yeah, I remember one time, I think it was like one of the first 3-day runs we had done, and me and my friends were like in Chicago, and someone was like, oh, we should try and find a Waffle House because it's like the nearest big city. So we're like, they got to have it. And we looked, like someone looked it up and like, it popped up as Waffle House, but it was just like some like mom and pop diner. It wasn't what we like were like craving or wanting, and we're just like, we'll just drive to the next city and just get going for the day.
For a second, I was actually really stoked to like have bands come to South Carolina because we got a Del Taco in Columbia, which just recently closed, unfortunately.
Oh no.
But it was always funny to be like, oh yeah, this is like the only Del Taco in like a 300-mile radius. You know?
Yeah. yeah, there's so many good spots. Like, we don't even have Jack in the Box, which I don't really even care that much for.
I've never eaten there. I don't think they have any. I don't eat meat, and I am pretty much vegan when I can be. I'm freegan. But there's hella nothing I can eat at Jack in the Box that isn't fries. Right. I don't think. I've definitely had the fries. They're lit, but everything else kind of seems weird. I don't know if you can confirm or deny YouTube. My YouTube algorithm tries to make it seem like it's bad, so.
I've only eaten there once, and I don't fully remember. Like, I don't think it was anything special. But it was just one of those times where we were near one, and we usually are never near one, so you just got to stop and like try it at least.
Real shit.
Yeah.
Me, every time I think I'm gonna like In-N-Out more, as somebody that can only get the grilled cheese there, every time I'm like, it'll be better. I go every time I see one, and I'm like, all right, it's just okay.
Yeah. Those are always bummer moments.
Maybe someday I'll keep trying.
You're finally gonna get to like one that just perfects it,
They
but
hit it.
then it'll never live up to it again.
Nope. I'm chasing for that. I'm chasing that moment. I'm ready for it.
Kind of jumping back into this record, it's a lot of the themes are, you know, like you also mentioned, it's a record about loss. There's a lot of themes in there, like see last semester, loss of an acquaintance, I don't want to butcher the rocket ship to heaven, kind of not really fully lost, but it's more just like your respect was lost for between like your parental figures. But I mean overall, like I mean there's a lot of those themes, and it's another record that I think a lot of the reason why a lot of people like in that age range are like flocking to this is it's very relatable with a lot of
Sure.
that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm glad you read the Bandcamp, because not a lot of people look at that. It is subtitled as a collection of songs concerning the loss of self, and it is a collection of every song that I've written thus far that felt like maybe like sans one or two, but like everything that felt like it told the story of like losing who you are and breaking yourself down and then building yourself back up, which is kind of why I wanted to go self-titled with the album name as well, and with the eponymous track, because it's all just about like doing shit over and over and over again until it breaks. And then you just kind of have to chill and let shit happen and, you know, go with the flow, and then everything gets better.
Right. Yeah, but I remember like the first time I got to Rock to the Moon,
Rocket Ship to
Rocket Ship to
Heaven.
Heaven, sorry.
Yeah. It's
I
a
like
reference.
yeah. Just when you kind of got to the lines about letting down like mom and dad and stuff like that, like
Yeah.
we've all had those moments growing up where you just really feel like that and like that shit hit hard. Like I haven't let down my parents recently. I don't think, but it's like I still found it super relatable where I was like, shit, I should call them. And I had already talked to my mom like 20 minutes before I listened to that song, and I was already like, I should just call her back.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's a weird one to talk about, I guess. I always feel like I'm letting my parents down, to be honest with you. They're a lot older than me. So I think by the time they were my age in the era that they lived in, it was a little easier for them to have already kind of had their shit together. And I don't know, my sister is a lot craftier than I am. My brother is a bit older than I am. We all grew up in different eras, and I definitely have been growing up in an era where shit hit the fan and it never stopped. So I constantly feel like I'm letting him down, because I don't know, it's hard to meet the expectation of people that don't understand what it's like to grow up right now. I know history repeats itself a lot, and it kind of has done that with some of the shit that they've been through also, but I don't know, times are different, and I don't know what I can do to make it better. And they tell me that everything's chill. I should just trust them more on that. That's anxiety, but it's hard not to feel like I'm letting them down.
No, yeah, I feel that, and so many people will feel that when they listen to this or you know relate to it. Like I've said, I don't know, I tend to get in this rhythm where I find it hard to fully talk about something without just like hyping it up multiple and multiple times.
Yeah.
So I do apologize if you keep hearing me say like this is an amazing record and super relatable, because that's just what I think about it.
It means a lot to me that you connect with it. So it's thank you. I'm probably going to just say thank you every time.
Okay, that works. Like, it's, this is a nice collection of 10 songs. If people are new to Stress Fractures and obviously haven't listened to, you know, the older versions, and this, they're coming into just this self-titled, I don't know, like, in your opinion, like, what are some, like, go-to songs to kind of get a feel for this era of Stress Fractures?
I mean, the self-titled track is definitely the go-to. That one, that one, I mean, it's the top track on Spotify. I never thought that would be the one, because I thought that one was too different from everything else, but Liz told me it was the one. Everybody that's been playing in the band has told me that's the one. So yeah, I guess I was wrong, which is sick because it's hella the one.
Okay.
So yeah, listen to that. Smoke, I think that song is fucking sick. But It's Good Enough, that's another favorite.
Oh yeah.
Basement of the Alamo is like my personal favorite, but I don't know that many other people rock with that one as much. It's a little more mid-tempo. So I don't know. Maybe it doesn't, you can't really bop as much to it like you can the rest.
Yeah.
But I think that one's lit. I think the guitar solo in it is cool. Somebody hit me up one day on Instagram. I was like, this is the most relatable song I've ever heard in my life. And I was like, word. So that helps solidify to me that song is kind of cool. So yeah, those are my top, I'd say Stress Fractures, Smoke, and But It's Good Enough would be like the top three, like newcomer, check these three out.
Okay, hell yeah.
I don't know, what do you think? What was your favorite track?
But It's Good Enough is a top one. See You Next Semester, I mean, that was the first one I found, so like it's easily becomes like one of my favorites.
Hell yeah.
Stun It is actually a pretty solid one too, that I would probably put at least top four.
True. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stun It's cool too. That's the oldest, I think that's the oldest one. At least like the riff, the bit-a-bit-a-bit-a-bit part in the what is it called? The chorus. I've had that riff written for like 10 years now.
Oh damn.
And I never knew what to use it for. And then that was the song that I used it for. I first wrote that finished the song in 2019.
Now, having that like riff in your back pocket for that entire time, like, how do you, like, when does it click that, like, oh, this riff should go for this song?
Sometimes never. I've got tons that I've been sitting on that I don't think I'm going to do anything with. Yeah, like some of them I'm like, this is just kind of bad, but now I'm used to playing it, so I'm just gonna fiddle with it every time I pick a guitar up. But I acknowledge that it's like not a good riff. But it's one that I remember because I've just played it a million times.
Yeah.
But no, that one I was I think it's the first riff I ever like wrote when I was like, how do I tap on a guitar? That was like one of the first things I came up with, and I don't know, something about it, I knew I had to use it.
Well, thankfully you held on to it and used it. Like, I mean, it came out sick, so.
Real, thank you. Yeah, and the wah effect on it, that was not my idea at all. When Jake Checkaway was mixing it, when he sent back the first mix, he was like, let me know if you like this. And I was like, yeah. But I don't own a wah pedal, so I can't do it live. Oh, well. But that was sick. It was sick. I'm glad he did that.
Yeah.
Now I need to buy a wah pedal.
Like, it was their ploy the entire time, just to, like, we're going to find out that they also sell wah pedals on the side. They're like, this is how you get one.
Yeah, and then I started leaning more into, like, the rock shit from the 90s. They all had wah pedals. Now I need to get one.
Right.
Problem.
So before we kind of transition, is there anything that we might not have talked about between Stress Fractures, the band, and Stress Fractures, the album, that you for sure want the people to know about?
Um, No, I think that we covered the highlights. If there's any takeaway somebody should take from stress fractures, is that, like, you know, if you keep doing the same thing over and over again and it's not feeling very good, try something else. You know, you never know until you try.
Yeah. Well, like I said, this album is great, and I'm stoked on it. But I am really stoked too to see what the future iterations of Stress Fractures are, as they kind of sound like they're more filling out with all these additional people coming in. I know this record's only 3 months old, but have you started working on that new stuff? Like, when can we kind of expect to see that in the future?
I would say that, like, from the second that I decided I was done writing the album Stress Fractures, which was like 2.5-3 years ago, when I like put a hard stop on when I was writing that album, I had already started writing more music. So I've had like 2.5-3 years of riffs that I've been working on. I've got some tracks that are a little more fleshed out, but I wanna, you know, see how this album does and let it breathe a little bit, and then maybe next year start working on some new stuff.
Hell yeah. Well, like I said,
for next year.
Yeah, I'm stoked for when it starts coming out. And I know everyone that's listening will be as well. We'll talk links and stuff late in a little bit, but so before we fully transition, this is obviously Beers with Fans. People don't have to actually be drinking on these episodes, because I will definitely do that for you. But I know you are drinking a fine beverage over there.
Oh, yeah.
What are you drinking on this fine Friday?
I figured I'd get a little crazy and crack open some High Lifes.
Hell yeah. The champagne of beers,
one,
man.
So we're going to crack open the next one. I only grabbed two. So for whatever reason, every time people come over to our house, they bring High Lifes, and then they always leave them as like a parting gift.
Yeah.
I don't drink very often, though. Like next to never do I drink. So I've got a fridge full of High Lifes I need to get drank, and this is the best occasion I could think to try.
Well, I appreciate you diving into those High Lifes for me tonight.
We got bottles, too.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, truly the champagne of beers. I feel like royalty in here.
And I mean, since you cracked your second one, I should crack my second one.
Only if you're done with the first.
Yeah. Drinking a nice, you know, good old PBR for today's episode. That's what I drink for 90% of the episodes, so it's cheap and it's in my fridge already.
It's a pretty good combination.
It really is.
Kind of how I feel about the High Lifes. There is a second where there's a bar in Charlotte called the Milestone. I'm pretty sure you can still use your drink tickets to get High Lifes for free, but whenever we would play there, that's what they would go towards. That or There were some nights where I could be convinced to use it on a Mickey's Big Mouth, which is disgusting, but I would do it as a bit. So.
Wow.
Yeah. Shout out to anybody that's drinking those for pleasure. Y'all are drinkers. Built different.
Well, I mean, that was the little beer segment for this episode, but now we're going to get into the later half of this episode, which is always my favorite part of the episodes. This is where I get to hear some stories from your time of music. Obviously, it sounds like you've toured a decent amount, and, you know, played some shows. As I normally say, they could be anything horrendous to tremendous or any adjective in between.
I have to think of some crazy ones. Are there crazy ones? I don't know.
Think about it is like, think about all the stories that you usually reminisce with your friends about. Those are probably usually the good ones.
What are horrendous to tremendous? What's a good tour story? We can have Liz in on this.
All right.
Horrendous
to tremendous. Do you want to spill anything tea, or do you, from anything's good?
That Meds tour with.
I don't want to talk about them. I don't want to speak ill of this person. However. There was a tour.
Balmoria was cool.
Oh yeah. Okay. There were some epic. Okay. There were two really epic moments on that same tour. So for reference let's set the scene. It's 2019. We can't find a drummer. I play drums on our demo. It sounds bad. So we know that we can't tour like that because that's just not how that works. You know, we can't tour without a drummer. And also there's no way that I can teach somebody else all the guitar parts and then drum and sing at the same time. Those aren't realistic options. Mm-hmm. So, I take to the internet, find a drummer. We had mutual friends, but never met each other in person before. We clicked okay. We ended up not getting along super well on the tour. I think it's past us. We've seen each other since. I get along with them now. I hope they get along with me too. But tensions were high on this tour. So every day I tried to make it so that we did like something that would calm everybody down and make us happy. So the two like really epic and beautiful things that we got to do when we were driving across Texas from El Paso. No, we were going to El Paso from San Antonio, and we stopped at Balmoria Springs, which is just like an oasis in the middle of the desert. I Googled okay. swimming hole. Yeah, I Googled swimming hole near me when we were in the middle of the desert, and I found that. And it was like ice cold, like crystal clear water just in a hole in the middle of the desert. And it was lit. I think about that all the time, and I'm always like, damn, how can we route that into a road trip? And there's never, it's always out of the way of everywhere I'm ever going.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Driving to El Paso is a nightmare. Have you done that before?
I have not done that run yet.
It's so long, and there's nothing for so long, hundreds of miles. You'll go hundreds of miles before you see something cool, which is like no diss to Central Texas, but like right. It's dark out there.
Like, is that just like from any direction or just the route that you normally
like take? Cutting straight across the middle of Texas? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's
okay.
Just it's so big and it's so empty. What? The stars are pretty. Yeah, there's no light pollution. So if it's a late night drive and a clear night, that shit's crazy.
Yeah.
But I do recommend that. You know,
go. You know what they say. Brains. The stars are big and bright. Dun, dun. In the heart of Texas.
Where everything is bigger.
Yeah.
Damn, that's crazy. And then, but on that same tour, we went to this, park in Little Rock where all of us had our alone time, because now at this point all of four of us were mad at each other all the time. It transcended, like, we were sort of not getting along with a singular person. We now all hate each other. So we go to this national park in Little Rock, and we all go our separate ways and like come back after like an hour of alone time in nature, and all of us are friends again. And there was this gigantic field, and the sun was setting, and there was a bunch of deer, like 50, 60 deer just standing in this field. So I just started walking towards them. And Eric, who was playing guitar for us at the time, took the, like, it's still my favorite picture of me ever. It's just me walking towards these deer with, like, it looks like a PS5 game with, like, the god rays from the sun coming down and shit. So those are like two, like, beautiful moments during a tremendous time, stupendous during horrendous. What has anything terrible happened to us? Oh yeah,
that's a funny story. I love that story, actually.
I don't know.
Jack podcast, but
no, I invited you to help me because I have a terrible, I was telling Liz literally yesterday, I was like, I should have kept a tour journal every time that we went on the road.
I think the knife story is,
because it's hard for me to remember this shit. I don't know if that's like ADHD or smoking weed, but like, it's so hard for me to remember the things that have happened to me.
And I feel like you're not the only one, because like, even, like, I remember certain things really vividly from like the tours that I've been on, but like, I never... like, I always remember just like the lame moments for whatever reason, and just never like anything crazy happening. And I've talked to, I mean, I've done like 100 of these episodes, and people are always like the same thing. Like they always have to like try and like open a random door in their mind of like something repressed that they did on tour.
Now that I've been thinking about that 2019 tour, I'm like, and Texas in general on that tour, there's so much more that had like happened in Texas that's now unlocking. There, when, so we did a lot of that tour with Taking Meds, and when we finally caught up with them,
you could talk about that whole show falling through and the fucking resort.
Oh my God, you're right. Okay, so when we were we were supposed to finally meet up with them in El Paso. That was our first show with them. That's oh my God, and this links into us going to the springs and everything.
This is an awesome this tour. Is, there's a lot of stories. The whole tour was a story.
We get to El Paso, we show up to the venue. The promoter has no idea who we are.
Oh,
thought that he was just booking a show for Taking Meds, who are conveniently stranded in Phoenix because their radiator blew up. So the show is canceled and the promoter doesn't even know us, but he's like, you know what? I'm going to take care of you guys. I work at a hotel. I can hook you up with a deal for like a $50 room. And we were like, okay, we'll take a $50 room. What he meant by that is he is giving us a penthouse for $50 at this, at this moderately nice hotel in El Paso. And then, yeah, we chilled in the hot tub at this El Paso semi-resort. What do you want to call it? It was like a high-end Hilton. I don't know what it was. But yeah, we had this whole little apartment to ourselves. We watched Detective Pikachu, like a cracked version of it on a Roku.
Okay.
Because at this time it was in theaters.
Yeah.
That dates this story. And yeah, Taking Meds showed up with us later that evening after they somehow got their car moving again. And then, oh my God, where did we play after that? Then that was the Cactus House. That was fine.
Yeah.
There, what was I gonna say? Because there was...
We went to that waterfall river thing the day after that. No, because we played Denton with them at Killer's Tacos.
There was something fucked up that happened with them, and I can't remember what it was. I had it, and then you reminded me of other shit.
The tour where we had to pick up their drummer?
Yes. No.
No.
Was that a different tour we did with them?
We did a lot of tours.
It doesn't help that we've done also like four tours with Taking Meds also. Like all of our significant like tours have been with Taking Meds. So like
so everything just blends together.
Yeah, so yes. I'm like, which one was it?
I'll be honest.
If I look at the tour flyer, that'll help me. I'm sorry for like wasting all of this time.
Oh no, you're fine.
I know you did.
I know.
I just feel like such a jackass, like digging, like let me look through my archive to find this one flyer type shit. Something fucked up happened with us.
Well,
I don't remember what city it was in.
Maybe
it wasn't like fucked up bad, but it was like funny.
Mm.
Now I guess it, like I said, I need to be writing things down. Clearly my memory is bad.
You're like I said, you're okay. We'll use this as a teach-well moment to every band person that's listening to this podcast. Start making a tour journal. That way, you know, you just remember your memories and just don't forget them with all the copious amounts of weed and alcohol.
It's true. The only reason that I even had the thought that I should have been keeping a diary this whole time is that I was reading Black Flag's wiki.
Mm.
And it said that Henry Rollins just would publish his tour diaries as books. And I was like, fuck. Not that I want people to read that, but I'm like, oh, that's how he has so many stories to tell, because at the end of every day, he just wrote down what he did.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he did like an episode of like, this is not happening, and he just talked about how like he would, I feel like in that story he mentioned like he was writing in his journal, and it's just now like I'm just now remembering that based off what you said. But yeah, like it's crazy that he would just jot everything down. I mean, Henry Rollins is a odd dude, so it makes sense kind of.
Did we go to Little Rock twice?
We did.
Fuck, that's terrible.
Yeah.
There's not a lot going on
in
Little Rock.
The first time we went to Little Rock, we were driving Eric's dad's car, and you guys locked the keys in the car and are really fucking mad at each other.
And then it turned out we had OnStar and we could remote unlock the car without the keys.
Yeah, and then you guys were like, oh, okay, word. But it was just like, you guys were so mad. And I was like, can y'all like calm the fuck down?
On that tour.
And then Will got mad at y'all for getting mad at each other over stupid shit. I remember that.
You can see that we were mad at each other a lot.
We've gotten a lot better. We figured it out. You have to have a
right. I feel you on the like the locked keys thing. Like we were in Phoenix, Albuquerque, and like we had time to kill before a show, so like we parked and then everyone kind of just split to go get food.
Yeah.
And whoever was like, I always kept my van keys on my carabiner, and I know someone else was driving or I let them have like my carabiner. Well, they took the carabiner off the keys because they didn't like when they drove, they didn't like it hitting the like part of the van like underneath the steering column, and so they somehow left they brought the carabiner with them when they left the van but left the keys.
That's insane.
For the van. Yeah, so and the other guy that had the keys, he either wasn't at the van in time or his keys were like in the bag in his backpack in the van, so we were all irresponsible for that one. And we got back and like we're all freaking out because we have to load in for this show, and we're like halfway contemplating like just breaking a window, but thankfully like our drummer's arms were small enough that he could fit it in an open window with his drumstick. He was able to like flip one of the like the old school like locks,
yeah,
like, a little up and down, so we were able to like get back in and get all our shit.
Do you remember when you locked the keys in the van in Atlanta?
And AAA said they were coming and then they never showed up. But then my phone was on 3%, but my charger was in the van.
So the full story with that is that we were playing a festival in Atlanta called Blue Fest at a venue that doesn't exist anymore called the Bakery, which just was a gigantic warehouse, and there's like not good heating and air in a building like that, and it's also the summer, so it's like 100+ degrees outside and humid because it's Atlanta, so it feels like shit inside and outside the venue.
Yep.
There's no diss to Atlanta or the show, it was sick, but Liz was like, I'm gonna cut the sleeves off my shirt, there's scissors in the van, I'll be right back, and then went to the van and came back and was like, the keys are in there, I can't get in.
Yeah, but I had AAA, so I was like, it's okay, I'll call AAA and they'll come get the keys out of the car. And then
they showed up while we were playing.
And I told them, they called and I said, I'll be out in 15 minutes. And they left. And then I had to call and wait 3 more hours on hold to get another person to come out to get the keys out of the van. And now I know how to get into a car with a screwdriver, so it's fine.
Yeah, we were without the keys for like 8 or 9 hours, I think.
Oh my god.
It was terrible.
And like all of us were also fucking dripping wet because it was 100 degrees and we just played a set in a warehouse. And we all wanted to change our clothes and stop smelling bad, but we literally couldn't.
It was an awful night.
It was something else.
Every day. Don't worry. I'm atoning for that.
There's this one time we were on tour with actually Tyler Stodchill's previous band before Stars Hollow.
Like the post-hardcore band?
No, the pop-punk one. Survival Soundtrack.
Okay.
And we were in, we just played like this one spot, kind of like outside Atlanta. And we were like, okay, what do we want to do tonight? And we, most of the tour, like we wouldn't drive like together, like it would kind of be like one person will get to a city before the other or whatever.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, let's go camping. We found this campsite and we're like, okay, yeah, this sounds good. And it's like the middle of summer, almost like end of July, August, and in Atlanta, and it's just so hot and muggy. No. And it was just the worst time I've ever had.
That's terrible. I can't believe they talked you into that.
Yeah. And then like, so like most of our band was just like, nah, like this fucking sucks. And then like a few, like their band and like a few other people from our band, like went and found like not far from like our campsite was like a little beach with like a lake or whatever. And so they went swimming, I'm pretty sure there was leeches that one of them had, like, oh, they found leeches on them at some point. Yeah. It was a fucked up night. We were just like, we want to get the fuck out of here.
That's, yeah, that's definitely nightmarish. I don't think we've had anything quite like that happen. There was one time we almost stayed at a house that had fleas and then made up an excuse, like, as to why we needed to keep driving through the night when we clearly didn't need to. So we ended up driving, yeah, that we ended up driving like 45 minutes down the road to just like a shitty motel. We were like, I'd rather sleep in a Moch Rotel than like risk getting fleas in our bags.
Right.
But like I noticed a flea on me and I was like, hell fucking no. We're not chewing that.
Yeah. Funny enough, on the last tour that I did, it was Stars Hollow and the band that I was running with, and we played Toronto that night, and we asked, like, I think the promoter or like just someone that was at the show, we're like, hey, can we like we crash at your place? And he's like, so you might not want to stay at my place, like, I got bed bugs and shit. And we're like, oh yeah, no. And he's like, but you guys can come like shower if you want. And someone was like, oh dude, like it's a shower. And I'm like, we were all like, no, like we're all in the same van right now, like we're not dealing with any of that. So we just drove like halfway to the border and then stayed at a rest stop and slept there that night.
Yeah, the only time that I played in Toronto was Liz and I were playing with Awake But Still in Bed for a tour, and we didn't even bother like trying to figure out how to like stay up there. We left all of our shit in a hotel across the border and then came back after the show, like back to New York.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, that's not true, because Clearbody, Eric and I played in Toronto, but Stephanie, our drummer, didn't have a passport, so she didn't come with us. And the guitarist for the band we were on tour with, Blissfields, his name is Brandon, he played drums for us instead for that show.
Mm.
But that's not stress fractures, but it is tour and it is me.
Yeah. Counts.
But yeah, I don't know. I would love to take stress fractures to Toronto. Toronto has been sick every time that I played there.
Yeah, the place that we played was like some I think like a vegan cafe, and it was like super sick.
Nice. Yeah. The spot that Awake But Still in Bed played was actually not very awesome. I forget what the bar was called, but we had to like load all of our gear up three flights of stairs to get there.
Oh fuck that.
Yeah, and that it was hella not lit.
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
That, yeah, and then the venue staff tried to take like a soft cut of our merch also, so our tour manager like distracted him while we loaded out and left. But then Clearbody played at the Monarch Tavern, which is a really nice spot, like a 150 cap room. Really good sound, really good stage, cool staff, good bar, good part of town. If anybody's ever trying to tour Toronto, play there. It's sick.
I mean, since we are kind of talking about tours, do you plan on doing any stress fractures tours in the near to sometime future?
Yeah. I'm trying to have us on the road in like late July, early August. We're going to do a couple shows with Kerosene Heights in September. Yeah. Shout out Kerosene Heights, that band is sick.
Yeah,
favorite dudes. And yeah, I don't know. I'm hoping maybe we can do something in the winter also. I like winter touring a lot more than I like summer touring. So if anybody wants to rock, hit me up, stressfracturesband@gmail.com. But nah, we have a lot of friends in the Southeast that we want to play with. That it's been a long time since we've gotten to play with, so I'm definitely trying to play around our neck of the woods a good bit and go back to the Northeast and New England, because it's been like 3 years, 4 years since we played up there now. Yeah, I don't know. I'm itching to get back on the road. It's just a logistics thing. I'm very poor, so
I feel that.
Once we figure out the not being poor situation, we'll figure out the going on tour situation.
Yeah, well, hopefully you know, those go well, and maybe one of these days we'll see you here in the Twin Cities, and we'll have a couple champagnes and beers in person.
I know, that's fucking right. As long as you don't give me Malort, we'll be chilling.
Oh yeah, no. Malort finally made its way to the Twin Cities, because it's mainly been like a Chicago-only thing.
Yeah.
And there was a show last year, I think it was like the first patio show of the year, and so, like, it just got to the town, and like the singer was like, yo, let's do shots of Malort, and everyone was just like, no. Like, it was like a slow-mo scene of like just everyone just being like, no, don't do that.
When I was playing an Insignificant Other, and we played it at Lincoln Hall with Kississippi, I didn't know what Malort was, and our guitarist Jesse was like, come on, do a Malort shot with me, you're in Chicago, you got to try it, it's the local thing. And I was like, all right. And I was like, this smells like a tire. And then I threw it back, and I was like, that tastes like a tire. This is fucking terrible.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that I, like, smelled it and was still like, all right, well, I'll try it. I took my own advice too far.
Yeah. I was at, like, a punk show in the Quad Cities, and the bar just happened to have Malort, and my friend was like, hey, dude, like, You're out, like, you came and visited, like, let's do a shot. And I was like, cool, yeah, let's do it. And I didn't realize that they had a special going, so that's why he bought the shot. It was like $1 per Malort shot, so yeah. We did that, and I was like, so I got him back, and then we did a second one like an hour or so later, and I ended up just like, at some point it time got away, and I got too drunk from I'm gonna blame it on Malort.
But. That's fair. I did not go past the one shot. I have no idea what it does to your body beyond one, other than like tell you don't do that ever again.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, it is a Chicago like tradition. Like there's a thing from what I've heard called like a Chicago handshake, where it's like a shot of Malort, and then they give you like a PBR or like a Hams to like chase it off with.
Okay, see. At New Brooklyn Tavern, the bar in Columbia where Stress Fractures did the release show, where I've worked there for, you know, I worked there a bit, and I've been going there since I was like 14 years old. Like that's the spot in South Carolina. They have the dumpster fire. So you get a PBR and either a half shot of Espolon or JMO, and it's $6 or $6.50 now, but that's like the South Carolina version, the good version, clearly. Okay. Nothing where you get Malort is a good version of anything.
Oh yeah, no, not at all.
What's okay, I don't know if I'm prolonging this longer than you want to go now, but what's the dopest city you've played? What's like your favorite city to play?
So I was always behind the scenes. I did like merching and just driving, but
the question still stands.
Yeah. I think the favorite city that I got to be a part of, I want to say it was Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
I don't think
mainly because like we showed up, we know that we're playing like a VFW hall, and we're like, okay, this is going to be like maybe 10 kids. Like the band that I was with, it was maybe like their second tour. So like, I mean, they were just friends of mine from high school. So we were like, okay, no one knows who we are. No one's going to give a shit. We're going to play to like 10 people, maybe make what we want for a guarantee, and then drive to the next city.
Yeah.
And it's one of those towns where I guess they don't have like a lot of like bands come through. So like at least 30 to 40 kids like rolled out and like actually like put on a good, like had a great time and like,
yeah,
were super sick about everything. And it was just like one of the funnest moments on that run.
That's sick. That's how I feel about like Denton, Texas. I think that was one of the ones where it's like I had no idea what I was getting into the first time that we played in Denton, and then we were like met by such a welcoming and dope community where it's just like everybody's nice and there's a lot of good bands. And then like every subsequent time we came back to Denton, people treated us like we were locals, like we were rock stars to them.
Yeah.
So yeah,
finding those pockets are always super sick. I feel like also Colorado Springs was also a good time. Mm-hmm. We met some like really good friends that like we stayed with for like 2 or 3 days, and like they like every like that town also rolls out for shows, whether it's like hard, whatever the bill is, like they'll roll out for it.
The only place that I've played in Colorado is in Denver, And I don't remember the city very well, because this is when Awake But Still in Bed was on that Mom Jeans tour. And I feel like there was, it was a lot of like driving and not a whole lot of experiencing. So that was very much one of those days where like we showed up to the venue, we played our set, we loaded out and we left. Yeah. And I'm bummed that it's like there's so many states that are like that now, which is like, I'm itching to get Stress Fractures on. The Stress Fractures tours are like vacation. We try to make it fun. So like, yeah. I need to go to Colorado and do something normal.
Yeah, like the last tour we did to Colorado, we kind of just planned it to have like a day off there so we could just hang out with our friends that we had already like met from the previous tour. And then like we kind of did a little sightseeing on like the day off. They took us to a couple like good spots. But yeah, trying to just mainly just like not make it fully feel like work the entire time is kind of the key.
Yeah, I think Mom Jeans tour, it's not because of like, it's not anybody's fault other than the fact that it was like a professional tour. Right, you know, that one I had to treat it like work.
Right.
But I don't know, I even though I don't make as much money on the DIY tours, it is fun just kind of like getting to have fun. Rocking is fun regardless, but like getting to, you know, sprinkle other shit in too, it's always nice.
Oh yeah. But yeah, like that's one thing that I mainly miss about touring, is just like being with your best friends in a vehicle and just hanging out basically 24/7, and then just seeing all your friends that you have met and like gained across the states, and just experiencing everything like that. That's the shit that I miss, and I hate being an adult to not get to do that anymore.
Yeah, for real. And the biggest bummer for me is I still don't feel like that much of an adult yet, and a lot of that like time that I wanted to spend with those people the last 3 years, it was pretty difficult to do that. But
yeah,
now I'm trying to come back harder. You know I want to see my friends, I want to play music, I'm ready to get back out again. And it's going to be sick when it finally happens.
Yeah. Well, I wish the best for you, and I hope that everything happens like that you want and need. Before we fully end, if anyone's looking for merch, music, or just Stress Fractures in general, where can they find it?
So merch you can find at acrobatunstable.com. I am also Acrobat Unstable, so I'll do a quick plug there. If you're into rock music, punk music, shoegaze music, hardcore music, check out some of our artists. I've gotten to work with Stars Hollow. I've gotten to work with Carpool. I've gotten to work with See-Through Person and Hazing Over and the Callous Dow Boys and a bunch of really fucking nice and talented people over the last 5 years that I've been doing that label. And it would just mean a lot to me even if you don't buy anything, just check out like the artist playlist that I made, the Acrobat Unstable Greatest Hits on Spotify. You might find something you really like. And if you want to find Stress Fractures, it's at Stress Fractures on Twitter, at stress.fractures on Instagram, and Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal, where they give us the most money. So listen on Tidal, Bandcamp. It's all just Stress Fractures, baby. It's the year of Stress Fractures.
Hell yeah. I do also want to add to what you're saying about Acrobat Unstable. My eyes are here looking for, I know I got a sticker around here somewhere, but I have like so much junk as I'm in the process of moving, but I definitely have Acrobat Unstable vinyl in these boxes here that I'm moving to my new house. You're killing it. You're definitely one of my favorite labels. I mean, you also have Glazed on the roster right now.
Shout out Glazed.
Solid dudes.
They're the best fucking band in the world.
They fucking rip. But, you know, everyone, go follow Acrobat Unstable and Stress Fractures. Stay up to date with everything that's coming out. And, you know, be ready for tours, you know, shows. Just stay up to date. Make sure you're following. But, you know, Marty, like one last big thank you for taking the time out of your Friday, and I can't stress this enough, no pun intended, this record is super sick, and I've enjoyed listening to it, and I, like, I wish you the best, and I can't wait to see what's coming next.
Thank you. I'm really grateful that I got to talk to you about it and just chit chat and sound stupid on the record with you. It was a lot of fun. I'm always excited to talk.
Hell yeah. Well, I mean, that's gonna do it for this episode. Everyone go follow Stress Fractures, and see you next time. See ya.